Welcome to Labor Talks, a podcast by NJASAP and for NJASAP that shares important news and information that you consume on your schedule. Labor Talks will tackle vital topics like safety, contract administration, the labor management relationship, and how to navigate life as a NetJets pilot. And we will bring this information to you with the help of experienced union leaders, industry consultants, and subject matter experts. Whether you listen in your car, on the treadmill, or while working on tasks around your home, Labor Talks is a worthy investment of your time and attention. Join your fellow pilots and advocates as Labor Talks. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Labor Talks. I'm your host, Claire Carey, and with me today is Accident Investigation Team Coordinator Captain Ed Hill. Join us for a conversation about the NJASAP Emergency Response Plan, what it entails, and how the plan has evolved over the years. Ed, thank you so much for sitting down with me and being my next victim. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, Claire.
Where are you joining us from today on this virtual record?
Home. Upstairs.
Okay. And where is home for you?
I live down in Carolina Beach, North Carolina, so I use Wilmington as my base.
Very nice. How did you fare in those storms this fall?
We managed to dodge the really bad one that hit the mountains, but we did have a tropical depression that never got a name that flooded us really good here in town that did the most damage this year for us. But otherwise, we got pretty lucky with all the really big storms this year.
All right. Glad to hear it. And how long have you been with NetJets?
I'm going on my 23rd year. In fact, 23 years ago right now, I was already hired. I was just waiting for an in-doc class.
Oh, that's great. Happy anniversary, I guess.
We're getting close. We'll count it.
Right. And about how long have you been a volunteer with NJASAP?
I started out right after we left the local 284 and wanted to get involved. I didn't want to sit on the sidelines. And my first gig actually was a P2P rep. And just to kind of date this thing, Mike Pascalar was my lead rep with the P2P phone tree.
That's awesome. And then how did you get involved in your position today as Accident Investigation Team Coordinator?
I started with the team in 07. I tried to join in 06, but I had a conflict with company recurrence, so I couldn't go that year and start out. So 07, really never had a passion for it. I was never really an accident investigation nerd. I just thought it was interesting. It's like being a detective for the true crime people. You're putting together factual data from various sources, and you're telling a story. And it's super interesting stuff.
That's very cool. Like a real life puzzle, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So for our new listeners or our new members at NetJets and NJASAP, tell us about the accident investigation team.
Well, our primary job is to actively participate in an NTSB investigation. We would bring resources to bear. So the NTSB operates off of what's called the party system, where they would bring what they call interested parties, different entities in to assist in the investigation because they don't really have the resources. So examples of parties would be the operator, aka NetJets, and the aircraft manufacturer, the engine manufacturer. The FAA is automatically granted party status. And of course, the union and the NTSB, they like having the union involved as a party for a couple of reasons. One, the union will bring a different perspective to the investigation. You get the pilot group's perspective and more broadly, the employee's perspective of it. And second, we bring the most important thing to the table. We bring current qualified line pilots that know the aircraft, know the systems, know the day-to-day operations. And and that becomes crucial when you start forming operations group or the cockpit voice recorder group. And we are the subject matter experts in the room for those things.
Right. So when you say we bring the employee's perspective or the pilot's group's perspective, you don't just mean the perspective of the pilot who is sitting in the cockpit during the event. You mean all of the Swiss cheese factors that kind of led up to the event.
Exactly. And you know, we... you know, we're the most likely to be thinking like the crew members involved because mm-hmm. we do it every day. So we bring that perspective. We bring the labor group's perspective and concerns to the investigation.
Right. The knowledge of the SOPs and the checklists and the company culture.
All of that stuff. Yep.
So tell us about the emergency response plan. What is it?
The ERP is kind of our blueprint, our checklist, if you will, in the moments after an event takes place, be it minor or major accident, it's chaotic. You've heard the term fog of war, right? Mm-hmm. So the ERP is sort of our instruments that we use to fly out of the fog and start finding the clarity. And so it kind of tries to control the chaos in the early minutes and hours after something happens. And it's just our guidebook.
So essentially the ERP is what you point to after an event takes place.
Correct. The first step, part A, is notification. We find out something's happened. And then it goes from there. And it's just a step-by-step process of getting people involved, the right people involved, how bad is it, you know, the level of seriousness of the event. And we can, it's all kind of automated now, actually, through Microsoft 365. And Teams is kind of our meeting place. It's evolved over the years. Mm-hmm.
So you speak of a step-by-step process. What are the steps that a NetJets pilot needs to follow in the emergency response plan?
Well, it's kind of a hole in our education, really, when we start talking about that stuff. Using the example of the last sim session of the day where you have the emergency evacuation, right? You stop on the runway, you run your QRC, you power off the sim, you come off motion, you go debrief and you go get dinner. In real life, you know, and you might even talk about, hey, we're going to go over there and meet in the grass and by the taxiway sign there, whatever. In real life, a lot of stuff happens after that last sim session when you're standing there in the grass. There's a lot still going on and there's a hole in our education there, and I'm glad we can talk about it. So getting right into it, the most important thing really is you're going to check and make sure that your passengers, crew, everybody's all right. And the next thing, and this should be the red item on your little mental QRC, is call the steward. Get mm-hmm. the steward involved. Steward on duty is going to be your point of contact, and they're going to walk you through the stuff I'm about to talk about more in depth. But really crucial stuff is... like I said, there's a lot going on. You don't want to make any statements. Don't want to talk about it. You want to make written or verbal statements to anyone. Mm-hmm. There's going to be all sorts of authority figures, be it, you know, the local airport authority manager, the local police. There's all kinds of folks that are going to be, they're bureaucrats. They're going to want their paperwork, and they're going to want you to make statements. Mm-hmm. You are not obligated to do that with any of those people. You'll be making statements later on, but not to the people, you know, immediately afterwards. And what we always tell people is, because, you know, you've been through a stressful event, and you want to get all the stuff off your chest. So the first thing we recommend you do is take out a piece of paper, find a piece of paper, and write the stuff down. Write down what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you recollect. And fold it up and put it in your pocket and don't show it to anybody.
Right, while it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah, well, it's kind of similar to social media where you're mad at somebody, you type out this response, but then you don't send it. But you still feel better because you wrote it out, right?
Right.
It's kind of that psychological effect. Plus, there's another benefit because the next day when you're writing your report, your crew member reports and all this other stuff you're going to be doing, it's nice to take that back out, and you might actually see something. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. Or more likely, you're going to look at it and say, God, I'm glad I didn't say that. you know, that's not anything what happened. You know, so that's kind of a good little rule of thumb to use if you're, you know, you're in a really high adrenaline situation and, you know, you're jazzed up, you're stressed out, something just happened. Just take those thoughts and write them down and that helps a lot as far as, because there's a lot of times you just want to spill your guts to anybody who will listen mm-hmm. in those situations. And that's the last thing that you want to do. So moving on there, if it's at all possible, you want to secure the aircraft. if you can, get your stuff off, lock the plane up, sticker it, and then keep your crew together and remove yourself from the scene. The main reason for that is just we're buying you time right now, because that's what you need is time. You're needing time to decompress, to process what's just happened. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that and not talk to people is just to get yourself away from the scene. You know, there's places where you can go, like hide in a conference room in the FBO. It doesn't really matter. Go across the street to Chick-fil-A and sit there. Just get away from the scene and the people and the buzz. It's coming back to buying time for you. There'll be plenty of time for the paperwork and the statements later. Right now, you just need to get away.
Right. So does the crew member have any obligation to remain close to the scene? You mentioned finding a conference room in the FBO or going across the street to the Chick-fil-A. Is it within reason for them, you know, in the event they don't need, let's say, medical attention, is it within reason for them to go to their hotel?
They can. As soon as you get a hotel, go. The protocol, and just as far as just being polite and professional with everyone, is, you know, remain contactable. If you have someone breathing down your neck for a statement that has no business getting a statement from you, you know, give them your contact info, information, get theirs, be polite, say, I'm not comfortable making a statement right now. Mm-hmm. If I could just get I will remain contactable and get yourself away from the scene. And what you're buying time. You are, you're also allowing us to get spooled up on our end. So we can, you know, once we have this information, we can start contacting these people and saying, no, they're not going to be making a statement right now. They'll be making their statement with the NTSB or the FAA later on. Mm-hmm. So it's easier said than done when you're in the heat of the moment. This is just the guidelines we give you, you know, to protect yourself, really, because when you're in the heat of the moment, like I say, you're all jazzed up, and, you know, you may make three different statements to three different people, and there'll be three different stories, because as your mind processes it, you know, your story is going to change. That's why we say take time, process it, and before you even start talking about it with anybody.
What is your advice on receiving medical attention?
Even if you don't need it, there may be times when you want to remove yourself to an emergency room or a urgent care somewhere. And it goes back to, you know, if you're getting a lot of pressure to make a statement or they're trying to keep you there for no reason, say, look, man, you know, my crew and I just went through an event here. We're pretty stressed out. We need to go get checked out. You know, no one in their right mind is going to deny a crew to go seek medical attention. So it can be an avenue to remove yourself from the scene if you need to. Say, so it's every situation is different. All of these situations are different every time.
Speaking of different situations, what might this look like in the event you're not in the United States?
That also depends. I know we have in the past said just, you know, immediately proceed to the U.S. Embassy. And that may be true in many cases. It depends. And there's maybe some places that don't even have an embassy, depending on where you are, what fleet you're in. But if you are, you know, involved in like a little fender bender, or you taxi into a object in Paris, you're probably not going to run off to the embassy, right? It's kind of born of that situation in Brazil, you know, where they had the midair collision and the crew got detained for all those months. And so mm-hmm. we're kind of spring loaded to have the crew run off to the embassy. And if the situation warrants, you will, if you're able, remove yourself and go to the embassy. In a lot of more first world situations, you know, you may or may not have to do that. And that will be, you'll get that guidance as the ERP runs its course and you're talking to your point of contact, most likely the steward or one of us, and we can advise you at that point. But it is, if you feel the need to go to the embassy, definitely do it.
So from the accident investigation team's perspective, you guys are more or less operating behind the scenes as this is all going on. And you mentioned some Microsoft procedures. How many of you are working any single event?
It depends on the severity of the event. If it's a minor taxi incident or something, it's what we call a remote response. Everyone's going to be on the phone. There's not going to be anybody on scene. And it goes all the way to a major full response where it's a major event and there's been, you know, it's a really bad accident. In that case, the alarm bells are going to go off with a lot of people. And so it's all kind of set up in the Microsoft 365 decision tree that Mike Hansen has been putting together, that when you fill, there's a form you fill out, and as depending on what box you check, it determines the response level and who gets notified. So if it's minor, it'll only be a handful of people, three or four folks that get the notification and then come together and decide who else to pull in, depending on the fleet and the situation. It's, so it's very dynamic, and it's a, like it's evolved over the years into a, more of an algorithm than a phone tree.
Makes sense. Is there any recent event that the AIT has handled that you can kind of walk us through and speak about?
Well, we've not since we've not that I can talk about since we started the new protocols. There's stuff that's ongoing, but we've gosh, we've handled several minor events over the years. When I was on the Phenom, we had a couple of runway excursions. And so I was involved in those investigations because I was in the fleet at the time and was considered one of the subject matter experts. But most of the stuff, thankfully, has been more minor as of late. It's been just minor scuffs and dings and stuff like that. But most of our dealings have been with, you know, the airplane's damaged, but the crew is fine, and we just need to go from there. And so I'm glad we were able to talk about that. That end of it for the benefit of the folks, especially the newer folks that haven't been exposed to this kind of stuff very often.
Mm-hmm. So you've kind of addressed it already, but during your time with the committee, in what ways have you seen the emergency response plan evolve to better protect our pilots and their livelihood?
Well, it's the technology that's evolved. The actual fundamentals and the specifics are pretty much just carried over. A lot of the checklists look almost identical to what they did 15 years ago. We've just incorporated them more digitally now with hyperlinks and everything else to make it easier to use them. But yeah, the main evolution has been in the technology. It used to be, you know, phone conferences where you had to have a passcode to get into the conference and join. And then it went to a text notification system that also directed you back to a phone conference. And now we've evolved into Teams, where it's kind of a little virtual office that you show up at, and you know, you get on a meeting, and even I am able to conduct a Teams meeting and share my screen and everything else. And so anything's possible. If I can figure it out, anybody can.
That's good. How often obviously perfect world, these emergencies don't happen. Unfortunately, they do from time to time. There hasn't been anything so bad within our company recently. But do you guys do anything to maintain currency on the plan or to practice it?
Yes. We do an annual training event. And it's normally joint with the company because they bring their accident investigation folks in as well. And we'll have an NTSB person or consultant come in and brief us on the NTSB protocols and things like that. And then we'll take a half a day or so over the Union Hall and just with the NJSAP folks and go over our ERP plan and how it works and how to manage and navigate through Teams and check in and all this other stuff that is essential to know, you know, because when things start happening in real life, you kind of have to know right where to go and where your checklist is. And just kind of focus and do what you got to do.
So where can crew members go to familiarize themselves with the ERP?
Well, it's not in public domain, I don't believe, right now. We have it in Teams. I just finished the most recent rewrite of the ERP manual that Graham Johnson actually had started late last year. And I've kind of gone in and straighten it up and simple. I'm trying to simplify things as much as possible and streamline it. So it's rolling out. It has rolled out, but it's in Teams. So we don't really have it published anywhere, I don't believe, to my knowledge.
Yeah, I think we have card backers going out. I don't know if you've seen those, but I don't know when we're releasing them.
It should be any time now. coming soon to a lanyard near you. We're going to develop. We've developed new badge. I don't know if call them badge backers, but it would be like pretty much the stuff I just covered on a lanyard tag that you'd have quick reference to, with the steward, call the steward in big bold letters. And also I would add to the stuff I was talking about earlier, the crew needs to be aware that they will be subject probably to a drug and alcohol test. So when you get released to the hotel, don't go having a beer and blowing off steam. You know, you're probably going to have to go maybe before you even get released from duty to do that.
Is there any recent accomplishment or success of the accident investigation team from the last few years that you can point to as you know, a big win or something you're proud of?
Not really. Our job isn't really much accomplishment as it is just being there. Our job is to participate, to have a seat at the table, to have our say in an investigation. Our biggest win probably is what's called the party statement, where when it's all said and done, the NTSB comes out with their, you know, their report, and the parties also have their submissions that go into the public docket. And it's kind of your say, your, you know, the things you agreed with or didn't agree with in the findings. That's really the only win you have, is getting that, getting your word in edgewise when it's all said and done.
Ed, is there anything else that you wish for the membership to know about either the accident investigation team or the emergency response plan?
Our team is probably the only one in the union that it really matters what fleet you're on, because you're a subject matter expert. And with the constant churn we have these days in the pilot group with the bids and the captain awards and everything, I'm constantly trying to bring new people in and find places for the people that have been around for a while when they change fleets. And so staffing is big when there's a lot of movement, and I'm always, you know, looking at resumes if anyone's interested. Mm-hmm. Ehill at njsap.com. It's easy to spell.
You heard it here, folks. They're looking for volunteers. Ehill at njsap.com. Well, Ed, thank you for joining us on today's edition of Labor Talks. For those of you listening, if you're interested in learning more about the information presented in today's episode, we've just provided Ed's email, or you could get in touch with the accident investigation team at AIT@NJASAP.com. Thanks so much, Ed.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Labor Talks. If you haven't already done so, please follow NJASAP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJASAP. Show your support for the union with comments, likes, and shares. If you enjoyed this episode, encourage your fellow NJASAP members to tune in. And please share recommendations for future podcast episodes with us at podcast@njasap.com. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, this is Labor Talks, presented by NJASAP.